Fasten your seatbelt, turn up the radio. We're going on a road trip. Live from the Lee Aukey Woodson Art Museum in Wausau on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio, this is Route 51. I'm Glenn Moberg, and today we're broadcasting before a live audience at one of the real jewels of the state of Wisconsin on 12th Street at the top of the hill on Wausau's beautiful east side, the always free Woodson Museum, host for the past several weeks of the internationally renowned Birds and Art exhibit, and now featuring In Search of Norman Rockwell's America, an exhibit dedicated to one of America's great artists and to the photography of our guest, Kevin Rivoli. Now, Kevin started this project with a proposition that Rockwell's art was not an unrealistic, overly optimistic, or idealistic interpretation of American life, but was instead an accurate reflection of real America, the America that not only existed during Rockwell's 60-year career as an artist, but which still exists today. And the proposition that Rockwell, by finding what was extraordinary in America's common everyday moments, was showing us the greatness of an America that's around us all the time, despite the daily deluge of crime, tragedy, conflict, and depravity that has become the staple of television news. In Rockwell's own words, quote, "I was showing the America I knew and observed to others who might not have noticed." Well, one man who noticed is our guest today for this special live broadcast, and the man who put together the exhibit on display here at the Woodson Museum. Kevin is a photojournalist who, in his own words, has spent the last 20 years documenting spontaneous moments in all areas of life, photographing picture stories relating to death, destruction, and human despair, but who also found that there was a need for another perspective. As he writes in the foreword to his book, he wants his children to know what life is and isn't, that they need to understand what is wrong with this crazy world that we live in, but also what is right and what is possible. And he writes, "I want them to embrace the simple moments that can and do happen every day, and I want them to laugh." Kevin Rivoli has preserved with his photography many simple moments of ordinary American life, touching, poignant, and humorous, in the same way that Norman Rockwell preserved simple moments in his painting. And today in this exhibit, we see Rivoli's photographs side by side with Rockwell's art, proving that the ideal is real and the ordinary is extraordinary. A round of applause, please, for our extraordinary guest, photographer Kevin Rivoli. Now, during this program, give us about 10 minutes or so, but we will be taking questions from those of you in the audience who want to comment on the photography or the pictures around us or ask Kevin about his work and what he finds inspiring. All you have to do is walk up to the microphone that's set up before you, and I will do everything I can to work you into the conversation as quickly as possible. For those of you who are listening on the Ideas Network, we do have some technical problems, and we will not be taking phone calls today. So, again, no phone calls for this program, and let's get started by asking Kevin the obvious question. What gave you the idea for the exhibit?
Well, the exhibit actually was spawned by the book. In the early 90s, my wife and I went to the Norman Rockwell Museum in Stockbridge, Mass., and it was there that I learned that the critics weren't very kind to Rockwell in the sense that they said that the America that he painted didn't exist. It was idyllic, that he made it up in his mind. And at the time, I was a working photojournalist, and I had a lot of these Rockwell-esque moments already in my files. And I said to my wife, that's ridiculous. I've got a lot of these images right now. And so I spent the next 18 years shooting pictures, just working, perfecting my craft as a photojournalist, never really intending to do a book about Norman Rockwell. I always wanted to have my work published. One day I thought of doing a book of just my work, of Americana, slice of life moments. As the years went by, a few years ago, my wife and I were looking at all my work, and she said to me, "What are we going to do with all these pictures?" And I said, "Well, let's take a look." So I put together a mock-up of a book, and I used one Norman Rockwell image. I was definitely influenced by Rockwell and, of course, other photographers and picture editors during my career. And The mock-up had one Rockwell image through the whole book, and all of the book was made up of my black and white pictures. And so my wife got online, and she started doing some research, and she found that, you know, this picture went with this Rockwell, and this picture went with this Rockwell, and the next thing you know, we had 150 pairings. And
so you're crediting your wife with the idea.
Oh, my wife was instrumental in this whole project, absolutely.
This is a wise man.
Absolutely, and I think she's listening now. So, but in any event, I redid the mock-up using the pairings, and we settled on 68 pairings for the book. And then it just really, the concept really came together for us. And so then we shopped that around to different book
Kevin,
publishers.
Kevin, you had trouble getting sponsors for this idea.
Sponsors for the show or?
For the whole idea showing, for taking the exhibit around and showing Rockwell's photographs.
Yes, that's true.
Rockwell's pictures next to your photographs.
That's true. We initially shopped it around to museums first. We thought we'd have a gallery exhibit first and then do a book. And two major museums, one is the International Center for Photography in New York and the Eastman House in Rochester. And they both said, it's a really nice idea, but it's too upbeat and too Americana. And my wife was on the phone, and she said, you're kidding, right? And they said, no, we're dead serious. It's too upbeat, too Americana for us. So we thought, well, that's just not right. So we abandoned the exhibit idea and then started to try to have a book published. We thought, well, if we get the book published, maybe then they can see it and really, you know, grasp a hold of it. And so we did. We shopped it around to publishers.
What does it say when those who sponsor art exhibits refuse to sponsor something because it's too upbeat? What does it say about America and the values that people in critical places have about this country?
Well, I think in the photography business, in photojournalism, the news industry, let's say, if I think there's a perception that if it's a difficult picture to look at, it's a good picture. And I just don't believe that. I'm a news photographer. I've been doing this for 20 years. I work for the Associated Press. I work for the New York Times. I work for USA Today. I cover everything from, you know, in my locality, I cover, you know, when presidents come into town, I cover them. Sarah Palin, they wanted me to cover it this Saturday. She's coming in. I do sports. I do trials, shootings, you know, anything that's news, and it seems to be always bad news.
And when that news is shown over and over again on your television set night after night, it gives you a very jaundiced, cynical view, an unbalanced view of America.
Well, yeah, I agree, and because you're constantly inundated with bad news. Like I was flying up here, and I'm in the airport. I'm waiting for my plane, and I'm watching CNN, and everything that I watched before I got on my plane was bad news. There wasn't one piece of good news that came out. And we just listened to the news before the show started here, and I just took some notes, and there wasn't really one upbeat story, not one. And so here we are, the economy's bad, we're struggling, we're stressed out, people are losing their jobs, and things are bad. So every day we're just bombarded with this stuff. And I just said, no, wait a second. We are missing these wonderful moments that are happening. It's so easy to let them go by because they're not, let's face it, they're not sexy, right? The birthday party with all the kids with their cheeks blown out as they're blowing out the candles, mm-hmm. right? I mean, you do that every year. And it's so easy to just let that go right by. Okay, cut the cake. Let's eat it. But, you know, if you take a moment and you really notice that, or if you can capture that in a picture, and then when you look at that picture, and the reason why I'm using a birthday party is because I just had one with my family, and I come from a large family. Well, my wife's family's side is large, 12 kids. So there's all these grandkids. And nieces and nephews, and every time there's a birthday party, there's this cake and the candles, and then all these cheeks, all these faces trying to blow those candles out. And so, of course, I'm shooting it, and I'm looking at it thinking, oh, this is such a wonderful moment. And this is the stuff that makes me feel good about the photography that I do.
And these moments go on around us all the time, and there are stories that too often aren't told in the news all of the time. Stories about art exhibits like this one that are rarely told in the news. Stories about individual people who are contributing to their community. Teachers who are teaching kids. Scientists who are coming up with new breakthroughs. One of the reasons that I'm happy working for Wisconsin Public Radio, and I've shared this with a lot of you in this room individually and talked about it over the air, is because we find the time to tell those stories, and we're not presenting this one-sided, cynical view of the world. I worked in commercial television. I worked in Chicago for a long time, and this is an oasis. And this book, In Search of Norman Rockwell's Oasis, In Search of Norman Rockwell's America, is also an oasis. And we're very lucky that Kevin has done what he's done and put together his photographs. Now, Norman Rockwell, despite his success and popularity and despite the beauty of his work, Kevin, his obvious talent, his unusual skill in illustration, he hasn't been taken seriously as an artist. One critic said he created an America that never was and never will be. Do you think he's finally getting his due?
I do. I mean, I think today illustrators are now considered artists, and I think there's a recognition that that Rockwell is an artist. I mean, I think it's just common sense. But, yeah.
And if you look at the artwork that's on display here, and I'm sure that all of you had a chance to go through the galleries, it's one thing to see it on the cover of the Saturday Evening Post. It's another thing to see the actual oil painting in front of you and the meticulous work that went into his craft. How did you choose the paintings and the photographs for the exhibit?
Well, I basically started with my images, and then we combed through books on the web, and then we eventually bought the definitive catalog of his work. And I mean, he was very prolific. He did about 4,000 pieces, you know, including drawings and doodles and things like that. So. What I would do is I'd take a picture that I thought had a Norman Rockwell-esque feel to it, that I thought that if Rockwell would have seen this moment in his life, he might have painted something like this. And then I would go through the books and the files and try to see if I could find something.
So you didn't deliberately shoot your photographs in order to recreate Rockwell paintings?
No, because, I mean, the images in the book were shot before the concept. So there are some images that match up very, very closely. There are others that are, as I said, Rockwell-esque, so they have a theme to it. And that was almost by happenstance. I mean, I was just moving along in life, working to keep elevating myself as a photojournalist.
And Rockwell used to stage photographs in order to recreate actual moments that he'd experienced. Then he'd paint off of those photographs. Did you stage any of your photos, or are these all spontaneous moments that you happen to capture on film?
Yeah, they're all spontaneous moments. I mean, that would defeat the purpose of the book too, and that's the reason also that you won't see exact replicas of what he did. If I were to want to replicate what he did exactly, I would have to stage it, which means I'd probably have to have a dog with me most of the time.
And it's amazing how close those images come to the original Rockwell paintings. We're talking to Kevin Rivoli, a photojournalist, the author of In Search of Norman Rockwell's America, an exhibit at the Woodson Art Museum in Wausau, where we are broadcasting live on Route 51 Regional Talk Radio. I'm Glenn Moberg. We'll be back with more after this short message.
Support for Wisconsin Public Radio comes from UMR, providing Employee Benefits Administration, Integrated Health Management, and Pharmacy Benefits Administration for self-funded employers throughout the U.S. More about UMR at umr.com.
We're back on Route 51 Regional Talk Radio, live at the Woodson Museum in beautiful downtown Wausau. I'm Glenn Moberg. Our guest today, photojournalist Kevin Rivoli, whose exhibit In Search of Norman Rockwell's America is not only a book, it's an exhibit on display at the Woodson Museum. We are not taking phone calls during this program because of some technical problems, but we hope to hear from some questions from our live audience as we progress through the show. Now, one of Rockwell's last works, Kevin, is a picture of Brooks Robinson, the all-star third baseman for the Baltimore Orioles. He's signing a baseball for a young boy in the stands, and the people pictured in the seats behind are real people that he knew. In fact, one guy chomping on a cigar is Norman Rockwell himself. He did that a lot, didn't he? Took people he knew and put them in his pictures.
He did, and he would often put himself in his pictures. There's a few that you would have to notice. He might either be in the reflection or he'll be in the corner of the picture. Yeah.
And you have next to it a very an equally touching photo of a player for the Houston Astros with an outstretched arm handing a baseball to a young boy. Almost looks like the top of the Sistine Chapel, if I can risk offending people with that comparison. But, you know, baseball and religion are one and the same to a lot of people.
Yes. It was interesting because and I actually had a chance to meet Brooks Robinson sometime later, and he was at the Baseball Hall of Fame, and I thought, geez, I got to go up and introduce myself. And I said, Mr. Robinson, I'm Kevin Rivley. I'm the guy who did In Search of Norman Rockwell's America. Oh, he said, I just love that book, you know, and that painting that Norman Rockwell did of me, I just love it. I just love it. And I said, well, I just wanted to thank you for participating in the book. But it was really nice to meet him.
Not all of Rockwell's work eschewed controversy, and if you look at what's right behind us on this wall, this is one of his most famous paintings. It's entitled The Problem We All Live With. And I'm going to describe this for the people who are listening. It shows one of those stereotypical Rockwell children, in this case a young African-American girl in a starched white dress, a white ribbon in her ponytail, carrying books and a ruler, being escorted by police and security forces to school. There's a splattered tomato on the wall behind her, and also on the wall, written faintly but visibly in large letters, there's the N-word, something that you probably wouldn't expect to see in a Norman Rockwell painting.
Yeah, you know, I mean, Rockwell, he did very socially significant pieces, and you have to remember that for all the lighthearted moments that he painted, you know, he told the story of America. He lived through two world wars, a depression, so yeah, he definitely was, documenting and chronicling America for us. Absolutely.
And recording artist Andy Williams, one of the things in this book, there are different people commenting, famous people that you know commenting on Rockwell's work and Kevin's photographs. He writes, "The problem we all live with makes us feel the shame of segregation in America. It's a great painting and exemplifies the greatness of Norman Rockwell." What I find interesting about this is you don't see the faces of the police or the security detail, but just by their stature and the crispness of their clothes, you get the image of people who are resolutely trying to do the right thing as your attention is focused on this innocent little girl.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a beautiful piece. It really is, and it's very powerful in its simplicity.
And, Kevin, you've got a photo that's displayed next to it, and it's right behind us here. Of a young boy, and he's either praying or in reflection, sitting next to the grave of the woman who ran the Underground Railroad during the Civil War, Harriet Tubman. Mm-hmm. Tell us about that.
Yeah, it's titled Remembering Those Who Came Before Us, and it's a the Harriet Tubman grave site is in my hometown in Auburn, New York, and there's a pilgrimage every year where people come and visit the grave site. So I happened to be shooting that one year, and I did. I noticed this boy kneeling down by this gravesite, and just the nuance of the picture, the body language, it just kind of spoke to me, and it came to me. So as I was shooting it, I knew it was a really nice moment, and so we paired that with the Rockwell, and entitled it "Remembering Those Who Came Before Us or Before Me," to make that connection from.
You wonder what the little boy is thinking.
You do. I mean, he could be looking at a ladybug for all we know, you know.
I don't think he's doing
that. Yeah. Body language says a lot. It really does. And you know, next to the gravesite, it became an important picture for the area.
Yeah, it's the old cliche, a picture telling a thousand words. Mm-hmm. Another one of Rockwell's famous and very serious works, it's actually a series of four paintings that he did during the 40s depicting each of the four freedoms. In the words of Franklin Roosevelt, freedom of speech, freedom of religion, freedom from want, and freedom from fear. Rockwell's freedom of speech painting is over there on that far wall. And it shows a working class man in a brown leather jacket, and he's got an agenda rolled up in his pocket, and he's standing up to speak at a public meeting as a group of businessmen in suit coats and ties look up to him deferentially. That's quite a statement.
Mm-hmm. Very much so. And I found a similar moment, actually, in a small town. It was called the town of Mentz, New York. And it was a town meeting, and the faces on all the people. It's an image where there's about 10 or 12 people, and with these concerned faces about what's going on in their community. And we paired that with the Rockwell. It seemed to work well.
And that photo is right there. It shows freedom of speech very much alive in the 90s when you took that photo, as it was back in the 40s when the painting was produced. And certainly, if you watched any of the town hall meetings over the past summer, you know freedom of speech is alive, if not always well, in the United States today.
Mm-hmm.
Rockwell's Freedom of Religion painting shows a group of faces, and they're all painted in brown sepia. That's the one that's over there. Hands up, raised in prayer, obviously from different religious traditions, different racial and ethnic backgrounds. And there's a rare caption on the top of that, a rare caption for a Rockwell painting. It's in bold letters, each according to the dictates of his own conscience.
Yeah, I mean, that's, you know, the Four Freedoms obviously are, I think, everybody's favorites. I mean, they're very powerful. And my image is just of these pair of hands, weathered, seasoned, on top of a Bible, it's an older woman on her lap.
The lady's wearing a crocheted white sweater,
yeah.
And she's got a very subdued floral printed skirt.
Yeah, yeah. And it doesn't matter what you believe in. It's the freedom to believe. This happens to be obviously the Holy Bible.
And I thought it interesting that in the 40s, he's obviously got people from different religious traditions.
Right. Exactly.
Pictured in that painting.
Yeah. And of course, like you said, you know, here again we are. I can't mimic that. If I mimicked it, I'd have to set that up. Now, this was a spontaneous moment that I captured and correlates to the theme that Rockwell was painting.
Kevin Rivoli, In Search of Norman Rockwell's America. It's a new book. It is also an exhibit here at the Woodson Art Museum in Wausau. This is Route 51. Regional Talk Radio. We're going to take a short break for the news. Hopefully we'll have some good stories. And we'll be back right after this. Welcome back to the Lee Yawkey Woodson Art Museum in Wausau. I'm Glenn Moberg, and you are listening to a special Route 51 regional talk radio program before a live audience with our guest, photographer Kevin Rivoli, talking about his exhibit here at the Woodson and his book, In Search of Norman Rockwell's America, pairing Rockwell's paintings with Rivoli's photos, showing that Rockwell was not portraying an idealistic vision of America, but was showing us instead an America that really existed during his time and still exists with ours. Now, unfortunately, we are not taking questions from our audience listening in on the Ideas Network. We've got some technical problems with our remote setup today, but we are taking questions from our studio audience, from our live audience here at the Woodson. And let's go to Ned, who is standing at the microphone.
Thank you, Glenn. This past summer, I went to Stockbridge, Massachusetts, and there's a museum of, this is the hometown of Norman Rockwell, and they have every single one of the 4,000-plus Saturday evening posts on display, plus his cottage that he did his drawings in, plus all the other art. It's just fascinating to see. And I wasn't aware of all these, all this artwork that's available in a museum there. And I just wanted to make people aware that there is a real gold mine of those people that like Norman Rockwell art. Just incredible gold mine. If you go to Western Massachusetts in the Berkshires, and you'll see an incredible town, including just like the Christmas scenes of this quaint little village that you think doesn't exist. It really does exist, and it's still like that. It's just amazing to see what you thought was just a dream, and it's a real town. Stockbridge, Massachusetts.
Ned, what do you think of all the Rockwell paintings that we've got in this room and in this museum?
I love it. I've seen almost every one this summer, all of them in this room, just about. It was just fascinating to go see all those.
Yeah, no, I agree. The museum is, I mean, if you're going to take a trip, it's well worth it. I mean, it's a quaint little town, and it's definitely, you know, Rockwell-esque.
Ned, thanks so much for your comment. And again, we've got another question from an audience member here. State your first name and the town you're from.
I'm Doug from Stevens Point. I noted there's quite a bit of differences between a painter and a photographer, one of which is you've got to get permission to get your photographs published or even to take them. How does that work when you've taken a picture years ago and now you decide you want to use it in a book or in an exhibition?
Well, for books, you really don't need anybody. You don't need a model release for books. But if you go into a commercial setting where, let's say, you want to make greeting cards or a calendar or T-shirts or mugs, then you need a model release. But what we did is I tracked all these people down. Well, I stand corrected. My wife did. Track these people down over the last 18 years, and we've got most of them to, you know, sign model releases, and you know, we gave them prints and books and things like that. They were thrilled to be a part of it. I mean, it's such a positive book and exhibit that people just gravitated to it. And even the famous people that we have in the book who were just so willing to talk about their experiences with Rockwell or about Rockwell, you know, names like Debbie Reynolds. You know, I remember my wife called her and got her at home on a Saturday watching TV. Mm-hmm. You know, and then she had to call back, and I picked up the phone, and she said, "Is Michelle Rivoli there?" And I said, "Yes, who's calling?" "Oh dear, this is Debbie Reynolds." I'm like, I'm looking at my wife going.
And she tells a story in the book about her being in Paris and running into the Rockwells, mm-hmm. At a bistro, and just as you were wowed to have Debbie Reynolds on the phone, she was wowed to run into Norman Rockwell and be able to spend some time with him.
Yeah, yeah. No, it was wonderful. And everybody just embraced it. I mean, nobody really said no unless they had either prior commitments or something to that effect. But, yeah, it was fun.
We have another question from the audience. And your first name
down
in the town?
Tara Lee from Edgar, Wisconsin. Some of the old photographers preferred certain films, certain developing methods, and some of their photographs were fantastic. You switched to digital. Do you get as good a results or better results with the digital?
Well, you know, some of the pieces in the book and in the exhibit were shot on film. And then I switched to digital in 1996 on a full-time basis. The digital today is just as good as film. It's just beautiful stuff. The technology is wonderful. And so it's very difficult to discern between the two mediums.
Rockwell, if we have another question, let's keep them coming.
Henry from Stevens Point. I appreciated your comment about the predominance of negative news and so forth in the media, and I appreciate public television countering that.
And public radio.
And public radio. Yep, sorry. I meant to say radio. Several years ago, I came across a magazine called Ode, which was originated in the Netherlands and whose goal, they say, is to find positive stories around the world that they can report as opposed to the negative. I was wondering if you've had a chance to provide any images for them or if you've had trouble getting your positive images published elsewhere other than in your book.
Yeah. No, I haven't done any work for that magazine. And, you know, a lot of these images are slice-of-life images, so they fit my concept of the book or the type of images that I'm collecting, but they don't really fit into the news environment. So, for instance, let's go back to the birthday party. I mean, you know, I don't know if the New York Times is going to run that picture on their front page. But, you know, President Obama coming to town, they'll run that picture.
The Saturday Evening Post, of course, ran a lot of beautiful Rockwell shots on its covers, particularly during wartime. One of those pictures shows, it's in the other room behind us, it shows a young soldier returning to what is obviously a low-income urban neighborhood of two flats, a mother gesturing with wide open arms, his brothers running out of the doorway to greet him, and others staring out of windows, climbing trees without branches. Rockwell wrote about the universal nature of those wartime paintings, and he said those scenes bridged the differences between all the different types of people that he was trying to reach. This is a quote. That scene was repeated all over the United States, in the slums of the big eastern cities, in the country towns of the Middle West, in Dallas, Seattle, Peoria, and Muscle Shell, Montana. I could be pretty sure that nobody would scratch his head and say, now what is that soldier standing in the backyard for? And why, in the name of all that is holy, is that woman delightedly screaming at him? There's a universal nature to a lot of these images, Kevin.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, it goes to the more things change, the more they stay the same. You know, the picture that I have with that is from a homecoming of soldiers from Iraq, and the two couples embracing each other, one with a tear coming down her face.
Very powerful,
so
emotional
happy.
Shot.
Thank you. And that was something that I read in the paper that they were going to have a homecoming ceremony, and I thought, you know what, I know there's going to be some powerful stuff here, so I decided to go, and that's what I came back with. Now, on the other side, I've got another picture of a young boy who's saluting, and that is a deployment. And it was such a different feeling from each event. Here's this little boy, probably had to be, looked like he was 5 or 6, in these big boots, and he's saluting from behind. Yeah, the picture's taken, you're looking at his back, and he's saluting. And in the background are all these soldiers saluting before they're being deployed to Iraq. And it was two powerful pictures to me, but that said two different things.
And what I find striking is that these photos, taken from what war, you wouldn't know by looking at them. It's very striking that Kevin's photos from the Iraq War are picturing images that look exactly like the paintings Norman Rockwell painted 65 years ago. I've got a question from my friend Betty Bradley, who's in the audience here.
Mr. Rivoli, I have a question to ask you, but first I want to tell you how grateful I am that you put this exhibit together.
Well, thank you.
I'm agreed. I'm a greeter here at the museum, and I know we're going to be overwhelmed with visitors.
Thank you, Betty.
My question is, in that Norman Rockwell painting of the baseball player signing a ball for a boy, well, every other picture of Norman Rockwell's, you can get real close to it and see all the detail. And that one, I was close to it, say I was maybe 18 inches away, and it looks like it's not finished. But if you back up far enough, then it comes to life.
Well, what's interesting, Betty, is that there's another picture, and I'm not going to be able to find it right away, of that same painting in this book, and there's much more detail in the faces.
Oh, are you talking about the Rockwell?
Yes, the Rockwell.
I thought she was talking about my picture.
No.
I'm like, what do you mean it's not finished?
What are you talking about? No, the painting.
Yes, the painting. That is an oil study that Rockwell did, I believe. Am I correct? It's an oil study. It's not the finished painting, but so Rockwell might start with a sketch, then he would do several studies.
Okay.
So that's kind of like the template for the picture that was later produced in all of its detail.
So for him it was a rough sketch as he's working towards the final product.
Did he ever finish the final?
It's in the book, but I.
Okay.
It's going to take.
We couldn't get that one on loan because Brooks Robinson owns that and he didn't want to loan it out. So. That's how much he loved it. But we were able to secure an oil study, which we felt was
very interesting.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, sure.
Norman Rockwell loved pictures of kids goofing around at swimming holes. And you've got a number of photos recreating the same scene. You've got a picture called Swimming Hole that shows a young boy dropping into the water from an overhanging rope, and you get his foot just as it breaks the surface. How did you manage that?
Oh, well, you know, I climbed up in this tree, and these kids were...
You were up high.
I was. I was in the tree. Yeah, I was in the tree. And these kids were jumping into the swimming pond from a rope that was attached to a tree. They would swing out, and then they would let go and drop into this pond. And in the back, you know, had a little, like a little dock. So it had really nice texture. So I thought, oh, that might be a different angle. So I climbed up the tree. I'm in there balancing in the tree trying to shoot. And basically that's, you know, you have a motor drive on your camera so you can shoot multiple frames, maybe 4 or 5 frames per second. And so I was able to catch that one moment where he's just, his toe is just
It looks like
water.
He's walking on the water.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, you got another picture, and I'm going to show this. It's labeled graduation tradition. It shows high school grads still in their caps and gowns plunging into a lake. There are recreational boats behind them. And one young man, he looks like Norman Rockwell could have drawn him, but it's a photograph. He's in perfect focus, 4 feet in the air, completely upside down, doing a backward somersault in the lake. Now, how in the world did you get this one?
Well, this is a small town, Skaneateles, Atlas, New York. And every year, the graduates, after the ceremony, they all go jump in the lake. So I knew that this was going to happen, so I positioned myself where they were all jumping off. And as they're just running by me, I'm just firing frames. So I've got all these feet and hands and stuff like this. And I remember seeing this one kid do the flip. And in the frame, I saw him. And, of course, again, with a motor drive, I'm taking, you know, multiple frames. And when I got back and I looked at it, I was like, oh, my God. You know, this kid's upside down. It was just a really nice moment. It worked out really well.
And for those of you who think high school graduates should sometimes jump in the lake, well, we've got a place where it really happens. Kevin Rivoli, he's a photojournalist in search of Norman Rockwell's America, an exhibit at the Woodson Museum. It's also a book. I'm Glenn Mobrig. This is Route 51 Regional Talk Radio. We've got a live audience here at the Woodson. And we will be back after this short break.
Support for Wisconsin Public Radio comes from UMR, providing Employee Benefits Administration, Integrated Health Management, and Pharmacy Benefits Administration for self-funded employers throughout the U.S. More about UMR at umr.com.
We are back at the Woodson Art Museum in Wausau. We have a live audience for Route 51 Regional Talk Radio. I'm Glenn Mobrig, and our subject today, In Search of Norman Rockwell's America. And do we have a question?
Hi, I'm Lynn from Denver. And I noticed all your work, at least the work that I can see in this room, because I haven't gotten around to the rest of the exhibit, is in black and white. Mm-hmm. And I think Rockwell's is both black and white and color and sepia. I wonder if you could talk a little bit about why you chose black and white and also what that was like in terms of evoking feelings and emotions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, good question. Most of my work I do in black and white. I capture it in color, but then I grayscale it and turn it into a black and white image. The reason why I do that is, we see the world in color. Everything is in color for us. And when you look at a black and white image, it strips away the color and it brings out the true essence of the image. So if you have a powerful image or a strong image, it will speak to you because you're only dealing with shades of gray. There's no reds to distract you. There's no yellows, bright yellows to distract you. So that's why I choose to use black and white as my medium to tell the stories of these individual pictures.
I want to quickly touch on a couple of other paintings and photo pairings. This is one about a barber shop. It's called Shuffleton's Barber Shop. It's a work from 1950, and it's got the viewer looking through the front window of a closed barber shop. The lights are out, the pot-bellied stove still lit, a single barber chair off to the side, wood floors, a broom, and through the open door, which is open just a crack, you see three elderly men playing violins and a cello around a kitchen table. Now, this one's paired with a barbershop scene that Kevin took, and you've got a smiling, talking barber dressed all in white giving a $5 haircut
to a middle-aged man who's laughing, covered with a white smock, two elderly men in baseball caps and winter jackets looking on, and the wall behind is decorated with Northwood scenes of lakes, trees, and flying ducks. So my question, Kevin, did you take that picture in northern Wisconsin? Because you could have.
Well, that's the funny thing. That's the nice thing about this book is every picture could be any town USA. All the pictures were obviously taken in upstate New York, but that was one of the reasons why I didn't tag the images, because you would really not know where they're from. It could be anywhere. That particular picture was a barbershop in Red Creek, New York, and I happened to be in the town, and I saw it. Basically, the barbershop was its own building, and it looked like a small one-car garage. And I walked in the door, and I saw these gentlemen there, and I thought, oh, boy, this is a really wonderful moment. And I said, guys, do you mind if I just kind of hang out here and see if I can make a nice picture of you guys? Well, sure, go ahead, no problem. You know. So they went about their business, cutting their hair, talking about the community events and what's going on. And the conversation was just, you know, the barbershop really is where, you know, and diners is where it's happening. And so I came back with this picture, and I've always loved this picture. And so when I was able to match it with Rockwell's, I thought, oh boy, this is a nice one. This is a nice pair.
Now, one of my favorite of your comparisons is a Saturday Evening Post cover from 1940, showing a red-haired teenage boy carrying two dripping chocolate ice cream cones, walking through a maze of beach umbrellas. You pair that with a photo called "Sharing a Cone." You have two toddlers sitting on a porch, a big American flag hanging behind them on the front door, and one of the little boys is holding a melting ice cream cone with an outstretched hand, with his friend or his younger brother licking the cone. How did you get that shot?
Well, those are my kids. Those are my boys. That's Jack and Nick, and they're 4 years old. And my family is not, they are definitely in my crosshairs as well. They're not immune by being family. So, but the boys, you know, being four, at the time I think they were three, you know, everything is new to them. Everything is real. Everything is natural. They just make wonderful pictures. And these are the moments, you know, when I say embrace the simple moments, these are the moments that I'm talking about. You know, something as simple as that. When I saw my son, you know, reach over to his twin brother to share the cone, I hopped on the motor. Now, I'm standing out by the street. I have a long piece of glass, because I don't want to be intrusive and just let it happen naturally. And I just hopped on the motor drive on this again, and I thought, oh, boy, that's just my kids, I almost started crying.
We have two more questions here, and we're down to our last, 3 minutes. So what I'm going to do is have you give me your question real quick, and then Claudette, you give me yours real quick back to back, and we'll have Kevin try to pick up on them.
Quick comment. My husband worked for a company that was near Stockbridge, and in the 70s, we visited Stockbridge, and the exhibit was in his home across right near the Red Lion Inn, which is a great place, by the way. And the yellow house across the street that's in one of his pictures, an associate of my husband's worked there, and we were in that house, too, which was fun. Mm-hmm. So it is a great place.
Charlotte, thanks so much. And Claudette, very quickly.
Because your work is spontaneous, and as a photographic journalist, I'm wondering, have there ever been moments when you have either felt or wondered whether or not you had invaded or become invasive in the life or the moment in which you're capturing?
Good question. You've only got 30 seconds to answer.
Oh, boy. have I ever wondered if I've been invasive? You know, if I do, then I don't come away with a picture. That's what happens. If you interrupt the natural happenings, then you won't have a moment. I mean, you really have to let it naturally occur and come to you. And if it does, it does. If it doesn't, it doesn't. I mean, there's been many times I've walked away without a picture.
Kevin Rivoli, did you have a Norman Rockwell childhood?
You know, I did. I did. I'd have to say I did. Yeah. My mom did a great job. And I celebrated all the traditions, you know, the first date, the prom, birthdays, my first dog. You know, I did all these great things, and so I credit my mom definitely to giving me that type of childhood.
And how many of us in this room live in North Central Wisconsin in large part because we had an opportunity to give our kids Norman Rockwell childhoods? Let's hear some applause. What's next for Kevin Rivoli?
Well, I got another book coming out June 2010. It's called The Best Things in Life Are Free.
And, thank you, Kevin Rivoli, for this wonderful hour. It's one of the best things, and it's been free. Our guest, photojournalist Kevin Rivoli, his book In Search of Norman Rockwell's America, the exhibit by the same name, on display now at the always free Lee Aukey Woodson Art Museum at the top of the hill on 12th Street on Wausau's east side. I'm Glenn Moberg for Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks to the Woodson Museum, Kathy Foley, Marcia Thiel, Andy McGivern, Jane Wienke, Joe Ruel, and Sherry Schrader for making this all happen. And a big thanks to all of you in our live studio audience. Thanks also to our executive producer, Rick Ryer, our on-air producer, Jane Ritker, our online producer, Scott Clark. Thanks, as always, to John Altenberg for the Route 51 theme. A reminder, you can follow our adventures on Route 51 on both Facebook and Twitter. That's it. Thanks for riding along with us today. Until next time, we are heading out of town.